You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
This is Ken Vellante with Something Rather Than Nothing podcast. And today we're speaking with Nicholas Rossi, director, cinematographer. I encountered his work, Heaven Adores You. A beautiful, well-done, researched documentary on somewhat of a Portland saint, Elliot Smith, a beautiful documentary. I contacted Nicholas. We got Nicholas here to learn about him as an artist and to talk a little bit about Portland and his documentary. Nicholas Rossi, great pleasure to have you on Something Rather Than Nothing.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Ken.
Absolutely. So, Nicholas, you're a director, cinematographer. Were you an artist when you were born?
Was I an artist when I was born? Probably. It really seemed to be something that started early and that I just was interested in at a very, very early age and started sort of doing things that other people, like teachers and whatnot in school and other adults seemed to sort of notice at an early age. And I had pretty supportive parents around that kind of stuff. So it seemed like this natural sort of just let Nicholas do what he's going to do. And I tried to explore everything. I was really curious about everything. I was really affected by things, really empathic at a young age, just affected by music, really emotionally attached to music at an early age, really into expressing myself, art. I think the film stuff came a little bit later, but before that, I was really influenced by photography, imagery. Even as a young kid, I was interested in theater, but never really made any sort of like strides with being in school plays or anything like that. That just didn't seem to my thing, but writing definitely was a thing that I was encouraged to sort of explore at a very early age too.
Yeah, and Nicholas, I'm gonna jump ahead based on something you said. I just wanted to follow up with what you said about your
sure.
Kind of connecting to music emotionally, because I think if you watch the documentary and just learn a little bit about you, you know, obviously to do an homage to Elliot Smith and the music there and the deep emotional content of that music. You mentioned mm-hmm. about how much it affects you. What was your journey like? Because Elliot Smith's music and getting that intimate with him as an artist and all those emotions and all that's in his song. What was that journey like for mm-hmm. you going through that as an artist creating something in connection to emotions?
You mean going into the making of Heaven Adores You, or
yeah,
going
into the film itself?
Into the film itself. Well, so I was living in Portland post, you know, growing up in Chicago. I just sort of landed in Portland in 1994. And so between 94 and 1999, I lived in the Portland area, spent a little bit of time up in Washington State, but mostly in Portland. And Elliot Smith was he was a guy in a band called Heat Miser, and he was part of a sort of a scene that was happening. There was this beautiful, amazing, creative music scene that was happening before I got there by many years. And then while I was there, it was just sort of, it was really blossoming. And Elliot's music just sort of was one of those things that became part of the scenery. Heat Miser was definitely this band that you would go out and see. And I was able to, you know, turn 21 in Portland and go to bars then and see the bands that were playing. But I think Elliot's solo stuff just sort of snuck up on me. I didn't realize when it was coming out. It hit me maybe a year or two later, and it probably fell into my life at a time that I really needed to listen to, you know, Elliot's music. I think I was probably going through some, you know, hard breakup of being, 23 years old and feeling just like my heart was spilling out of my chest. And somebody introduced me to Elliott Smith and his music, and that sort of music just fit exactly where it needed to. And it was, it was music as medicine, and it was something that just sort of was, very comforting to listen to. I didn't really fully understand just, how much of a sort of genius Elliott Smith was when, when you're just listening to it for the medicinal properties of music.
Yeah.
And then Elliott Smith sort of, he left. He left Portland. I left Portland. I went on to do other things. And several years later, ended up living in Los Angeles, kind of still trying to, find that filmmaker thing. And that was, during the year that Elliott Smith died. He died not too far away from where I was living. And somebody told me about a solutions wall that was being sort of made up as a makeshift memorial to him. So I went down there with a camera and shot some footage and just sort of wanted to pay my respects to Elliott Smith as this person who had this effect on me as a young kid. And that footage turned into a small short video that was sort of like a tribute. And that video got some feedback, and that feedback sort of prompted a bigger question of how is it that we're still talking about Elliott Smith? I thought that only people in Portland knew him. I really hadn't tracked his journey post Portland. I knew that when he left, he went to New York, and then I saw him once or twice in a record store in Los Angeles, and then he was dead. And so the question of, why is Elliott Smith still a big thing? Why are people still discovering his music? Why did he have this big impact on people? Became the sort of the beginning of, well, let's find out. Let's find out why Elliott Smith was this bigger thing. And that was the beginning of Heaven Adores You. And it was an interesting journey to kind of start to go back to the Portland days and to kind of look back at what Portland was. This was 10 years after I left. So, and Portland's a city that, has definitely changed since that movie was made even.
Yeah. And changed a lot. Nicholas, I want to follow up a bit more with you in particular about, the impact of the music and the Portland music scene and its impact on you as an artist. But first, I want to cut to a clip of your documentary. It's a short clip and just a brief discussion around that Elliott Smith is a Portland thing, but the cat's starting to get out of the bag. So that's going to be the clip, Nicholas.
Right. Okay.
It was clear that, Elliott had kind of finished playing music that he didn't feel was his anymore.
When it went from those shows of, 10 kids, it went from that to big all of a sudden. I remember the upstairs of La Luna being filled, and everyone was sitting down, and everyone was silent, and it was like one of the things, like the cat's out of the bag.
And it was such such a big part of the story that you're telling in the documentary. I think fame, becoming big, this kind of guy from Portland singing songs. I want to tell you, Nicholas, one of the things that the documentary did for me, and it connects to some comments you made. So it's like the question of why is there still this, phenomena? Why are there these the desire to learn more about Elliott Smith? And when I was listening to and watching your documentary, I realized through some of the clips or maybe seeing him play how truly intricate his songs were, and I've been fooled on some of those songs because they just float to you, but there's such an intricacy and such a depth to the music. I think that's a huge part of it. Did you discover that or see the same type of thing within the music itself?
Yeah. I mean, I think when you're a spectator of watching Elliott Smith play, you're sort of you're astounded that somebody can be so great at, you know, putting these beautiful words together with this great guitar playing. And there was a sort of a vibe, if you will, of like being in the same space and watching him perform, because like everybody describes and like Sean Krogan described in that clip, you know, everybody was silent. Everybody was just sort of in awe of this thing that was happening. I think when it came time to, you know, sort of explore Elliott Smith as an artist in this documentary, I, you know, spent months and months and months listening to his music beforehand, and then months and months listening to it while we were making the film. And I still spend days listening to Elliott Smith. It's like the kind of stuff that never, you discover something, you know, intricate in it every time you listen to it. So yeah, I mean, it was a gift to sort of start to unpack the genius of Elliott Smith by making a film about him.
Yeah, and Nicholas, I want to get into a little bit more about you as an artist. I understand that Heavens Adore You is your first full feature with you as director, and you've worked as a cinematographer, and you talked about photography. I've worked on a couple very short documentaries. I'm actually struggling on one at present, and I tell you, one of the things, discoveries for me in trying to practice what you do is a deep and profound respect of trying to get it right or tell the story sound-wise, visually, et cetera, you know, on a documentary. And you did that, and I think you excelled with that. It took a while for you to put together this project, Heaven Adores You, and it's obviously connected to your love of Elliott Smith's music and your desire to tell that story.
Yeah.
Were there any times when you were doing this that you just said, am I the right person? What kept you going in creating this and spending the time on this and telling this story of Elliott Smith as a creator, you as a creator?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny to look back at it now and be like, what made you think that you could pull this off? And I think there's like a bit of not knowing that sort of lets you just sort of walk into things like this and just say, okay, I think I can do this. I think I can do this. And then people are supporting you to do this. I mean, I sat on pulling the trigger on a Kickstarter campaign to fund Heaven Adores You for over a year, just, you know, like not sure if this was something that I could do or if I could get to do it, or, you know, if people would let me do it, or any of those kind of questions that come up when you're dealing with the life story of somebody who's not around, especially, you know, somebody who you can't interview themselves. And I think I just said, like, I'm going to do the best that I can do. I'm going to do what I would like to do about telling Elliott's story. And, you know, I'll do my best and I'll try to honor him in the way that I feel is most appropriate to the impact that he had, and to, you know, honor him in the way that the fans that he has amassed over, you know, the past 20 years. Hopefully they like it too, but yeah, I mean, it's terrifying in some ways to be working with such precious material, and a precious legacy of somebody who meant so much to so many people. And I don't know if you ever think, can I do it? You accept the responsibility and the challenge, and you do it like with very best intentions. And I think, you know, I had great support from the producers and from the contributors, and every step of the film just seemed like, okay, well, seems like we're moving forward on this. There weren't a whole lot of big glaring red flags or big roadblocks. It was just, we want to make a film that honors Elliott Smith and his legacy and his music. And I think people were at a point, you know, the people who knew him best were at a point where they were ready to talk about it. And so I was extraordinarily lucky to be the person to get to talk to them about Elliott.
Yeah. I got a big question coming after this one, but I wanted to say with regards to the documentary, I mean, as far as getting a place, a feel for place in time in some of the local community radio clips that you had, some of some of the posters from the time, some of the bigger bands coming up through Portland a little bit before Poison Idea, capturing the scene. Mm-hmm. Not easy to do, but it's definitely there, and it gives you maybe that feel for the time. Nicholas, I got to hit you with the big question, since you're an artist and you create art, and this beautiful piece Heaven Adores You and other cinematography work that you do. But what is art?
I think art is what it is to you, you know, like what it is to the person who's being asked that question. For me, I can only speak for me, I guess, art is that stuff that you don't necessarily sometimes notice right away, but you see it in the details of things, or you see it in the shadows. I mean, I think that there's art, and it's there. You make art so that you can put art out there, and you can put it out there for people to enjoy it as art. And then there's that sort of other stuff that I feel like naturally happens. It sort of organically happens. It's the stuff that, you know, you accidentally come across, or you accidentally put out, or you accidentally make, or you just sort of focus your energy on something that's, you know, cathartic, or, you know, something that makes you feel great about something. It's the product of how you're living your life. But it's such a hard question to answer, because it's, you know, what is art? It is what it is.
There's, you know, that, I mentioned in a show a while back, there was the Supreme Court decision. I think it was Supreme Court on the definition of pornography. You know it when you see it. Uh-huh. You know it when you see it. I don't know what to tell you. Art, yeah. You know when you see it.
Art, in some ways, I noticed, you know, I've been noticing lately, and when I first moved to New York, I started paying a lot of attention to graffiti and you know, people who put up sticker art and tagging and stuff like that. When I was growing up in Chicago, tagging was a big thing. And I noticed it more here as a way for people to sort of communicate to each other. And of course, you know, I don't know a whole lot about the tagging culture, but I know that it's, you're putting your tag up, and that's you saying, this is my name, whatever. But I'm really fascinated sometimes by how, like, sometimes art isn't there for you to necessarily notice unless you accidentally come across it, or you happen to just be looking down at the moment where somebody, you know, spray painted a stencil on the sidewalk that is artistic, and it's there for you, if you want to engage with it. Maybe some people never experience art.
I think Sid, you know, I love Chicago. You're from Chicago. We're talking Chicago, Portland, New York City. One of the components of those cities, without speaking about anything else that I enjoy, is that art happens there. There's a vibrancy, electricity in New York City. Portland has its own wacky vibe, but it's an art vibe through and through, most neighborhoods you walk in through. And Chicago, oh my gosh, I think the greatest museum in the entire world, the Art Institute of Chicago. So I adore Chicago. Nicholas, another kind of conceptual question about you, you as a creator. I see in your work that you spend a lot of time professionally looking to tell the story. Do you ever step back and say why you create, or what drives you to try to tell the particular stories that you tell?
Sure, because I feel like if I'm embarking on a project, I have to know that I'm going to spend a significant chunk of my life involved in it, and it does become this thing that can consume you. And you do get to ask that question, like, what is it why am I exploring this? Why is this coming into my life now? Why is this topic something that I'm going to work on? And sometimes you work on stuff that's not yours and you still find a connection to it. And sometimes you get to work on stuff that's yours and maybe other people don't find the connection to your work, but you do it because it feels like the thing that you need to work out. I mean, I think that's a big part of it too. Like sometimes I just need to work out stuff, even if it doesn't flesh itself out into a motion picture or that, you know, nobody will ever see it. It's practice and it's working things out in your head and it's working out feelings and it's working out technique and it's working out sort of the craft that, you know, prepares you for, you know, the next project that you're going to take on.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said about, I think about not creating art as well. And just sort of, you know, sort of living in a moment where you get to do your own research and you get to sort of plan and nest and sort of collect things for what you feel is going to be your next artistic journey.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I had a question that I didn't want to forget to ask you, Nicholas, and just hearing some of your comments about your connection to music. I share that on the program. I'm really impacted by music, adore music, knocked over by music, and I can hear some of that in your thoughts. I just wondered, out of curiosity, when I've lived in different areas of the country. I'm from Rhode Island. I've lived in Washington, D.C., and Wisconsin and Oregon for about 10 years, and I adore the Portland music scene. When you went from Chicago, I mean, Chicago music, right? I can hear the music right now. But when you go from Chicago and went to Portland, was there anything that stood out for you as far as music or the music scene or any component around the differences you saw from Chicago to Portland?
No, I don't know. Because I think when I was in Chicago, I wasn't necessarily listening to the Chicago music scene. I was kind of listening to anything that was happening in, you know, 1989 to 1994.
Sure.
So that included all this sort of indie stuff that was coming up, and it was from places that, you know, I'd never been to. I was listening to Sebado and Mazzy Star, and you know, I was always listening to the Butthole Surfers too. But so I think when I moved to Oregon, it was at the sort of, I mean, the tail end of grunge for sure. I remember like Kurt Cobain died, and then I took a train to Seattle, and that was the end. But there was still this sort of overflow of grunge in the Pacific Northwest that was still there. And that sort of morphed into this post-punk pop stuff of, you know, the Heat Miser, Hazel, Cracker Bash, that Portland scene. I don't remember ever feeling like, oh, I just stepped into a completely different music scene, as much as, going from Chicago, where I grew up, to Oregon, where I'd never even visited prior to ending up there. It just seemed like, okay, I'm in a totally different world, and the world is mine to explore.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. I got a big question for you, but I wanted to tell you a quick Portland Sebado story that I think you might enjoy. It's stuff like this happens in Portland. You mentioned Sebado, band that I really enjoy, and the connection of Dinosaur Jr. and Lou Barlow. But Sebado was doing a little signing in a record shop, a very good record shop, name escaping me right now, in Portland. My son plays guitar, and he's wild into music. He's going to be turning 18 soon. And I grabbed him out of school because Sebado was signing, right? So I just grabbed him out of school for like one of his last periods. I'm like, Aiden's like, why are you getting me out of school? Like, I don't have a dentist appointment. I'm like, Sebado, get in the car. And we raced across town, and basically sweating and running, going into the music store, and we just missed him. We just missed Sebado, and I'm quizzing the owner. I'm like, hey, we're gonna come back in, but like, what's the deal? Did we just miss him? Can we track him down? I mean, we we came here just for Sebado, and, you know, and he's like, oh my God, they're there getting on the bus. So we saw Sebado get on the Portland City bus, and we unfortunately missed the signing for Sebado.
I mean, Sebado, I adore Lou Barlow so much. I think he's fantastic. And I love all the stuff that he does, so much so that I made it a point to include some footage of Lou Barlow and Elliott Smith talking in the Heaven Adores You. I saw this MTV clip or something, yes, some sort of interview. Yes. I was like, I love Lou Barlow so much. I really want to just put him with Elliott Smith in this film. I want it to live there so that, you know, 10, 20 years from now, if somebody watches Heaven Adores You, they can see a Lou Barlow in there and maybe ask Lou Barlow.
Nicholas Rossi, you are a good, good man. You're a good man. Thank you for doing that. You know, I did get to see Sebado play that night. I had a ticket to the Doug Fir Lounge, which is featured at the end of your mm-hmm. movie as a location, beautiful location, Doug Fir Lounge. I got one big monster question for you, Nicholas, and towards the end, I want to play basically the ending of the film, and it'll explain itself. But before we get to how the audience can connect with you, there's the big question that the show is entitled, and I want to see if you wanted to take a stab at it. Why is there something rather than nothing?
Yeah, why is there? I mean, I suppose there's nothing as well as something. When I think about, you know, why is there something rather than nothing? I mean, part of me feels like, well, of course you have to have something to, I don't know, distract you, entertain you, inspire you, give you reason to wake up in the morning. Everybody has a something, but I also love the nothing too. I love that there's the ability to connect to nothing if you want to. I mean, it's kind of like that art question, you know. I think art is what you want it to be, and something is kind of, it's why do you have it? Because most people want it. Most people want something. It makes them feel better to have something, have that sort of, I don't know, that plan. That thing.
The thing, you know, the language ends up with things. I mean, I wanted to say something. One thing I noticed, and this is going to sound slightly strange probably, but one of the things in watching your documentary, getting back into another Elliott Smith phase, my first heavy Elliott Smith phase in a few years. I've had a few. And and hearing how much Elliott Smith's in his lyrics, he's using the words something, nothing, anything. He uses that a lot. So I'm actually going to explore that and just kind of see what happens. Because a lot of times that kind of at the end of thought, you're just talking about things. Well, you know, in an interview, we're talking about things. Philosophers are talking about things. So I thought it was just curious, curious to notice. All right. So Nicholas Rossi, I want the listeners of the show to be able to connect with your work, maybe film and projects that you've worked on that you'd like to point their attention to, or, you know, I think you might have a professional website. Can you help guide the listeners to how to connect with both you and, of course, the film we've talked about as well, Heaven Adores You?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, Heaven Adores You is widely available to watch. It is available on Amazon if you do the Amazon thing. There's the good old-fashioned DVD and Blu-ray and all that kind of stuff that you can find it on. It's pretty readily available. As for me, my days of social media just seem like they're coming closer and closer to an end. And I'm not as active, I think, as I once was, but I'm certainly discoverable on the internet. I'm sure somebody can find a way. I'm always sort of up for chatting with people about art and film and Elliot Smith. I have a website that has all my cinematography stuff on it. It's of course NicholasRossi.com, but I'm pretty easy to get in touch with. There's not a whole lot of Nicholas Rossis out there.
Yeah, well, and I wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to pop onto the show and to tell you, I think your full directorial debut with this film, I think you took on a pretty heavy lift, and I think you pulled it off. I think it's absolutely clear to the viewer that you pulled it off, and I wanted to let you know that. I wanted to recommend Heaven Adores You.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah, to everybody, and of course, celebrating what you do in that the music of Elliot Smith. Thanks for popping on the program and talking about art. A real blast.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And I'm going to cut to now, essentially, the end of your film. Everybody check it out. Heaven Adores You, Nicholas Rossi. Thanks so much. And thanks for listening to Something Rather Than Nothing.
Well, we've got another one here. This is going to be, I think, the closing song.
Uh-huh.
Is there a reason you picked this one to close the album?
Because it was kind of happy.
It's got a positive name, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
We have Elliot Smith in the studio with us. It's Morning Becomes Eclectic on 89.9 KCRW.
Hello, y'all. Welcome to No Name Number One, a tribute to the life and music of the great Elliot Smith.
There's nothing she could do until after.